Roger is willing to answer some questions, so we'll have a few questions now.
Yes. Do you have any recurrent dreams?
I do. One of them, it's a very black dream, which is, I always have a dream of being falsely accused and being imprisoned. Probably my anxiety dream. People dream of tornadoes and things like that. My anxiety dream is I'm always arrested for something I didn't do. And I go to jail, and I'm always trying to explain to people that I didn't do it. That's why I think prison sometimes figures into my work, because I dream about that. I don't have the dragon and fairy dreams. My dreams are like an HBO show. They're very gritty. They're very The Wire. There's nothing ever fantastic that happens in them. So that's my recurring dream, one of many. Any other questions?
When you begin writing, do you start with an idea in mind, or do you start with a form that you'd like to form within?
I think I've done all of the above. Sometimes you hear something, you hear a snatch of language, you hear something, for some reason that's peculiar, or you overhear someone speaking, you hear a voice that you want to inhabit. I think I've done the form thing where for a while I was just trying to write sonnets. I was trying to learn why everybody loves sonnets. So I was writing a lot of sonnets and then pantoum. So you might do that. But I find that I do best when I'm driven first through language to the poem, because poems are a sound machine. Most basic definition is sound over a line. And so I'm always very interested in inhabiting sound first. But I think however you get to the poem, it's kind of like a street fight. You just don't want to get knocked out. You're trying to grapple with the sound of the poem. So I think all of the above. It depends on what you're trying to do. When I was younger, sometimes, because I played sports, I very much looked at writing poems as practice, like batting practice and shooting hoops. So a lot of times it was just foul shots. I'd do 100 foul shots just to get that rhythm and to know what it is. And I think I do that with poems, with certain forms, where I'm just gonna keep shooting. And that might turn into something. I might find something, I might not. But it doesn't hurt to write one more poem. No one in the world is worse for one more poem. It's not like one more bomb, right? One more Scud missile or something. We're worse for that.
I really appreciated what you said about Yeats. And I was wondering right now, who is the person that you would love to have an epic rap off with?
Living or dead?
Either.
Okay. I like this question.
I have to say the poet that I've been grappling with a lot right now is Frank Bidart. I've been really reading through In the Western Night. I've read all of his work, and now I'm reading it again. For some reason, it's landing with me differently. The poet that I actually wouldn't want to battle because he would kill me, or maybe not, because he would out-deprecate me, is John Berryman. I think that Berryman, to me, is one of the best lyricists, one of the best writers, period. I love him. That would be someone that I would love to sit and throw language back and forth with, because he thinks so well in such a small space. I was just looking at The Demented Priest the other day. This poem, it's in the 18-line form, like the Dream Songs, but very different than the Dream Songs in that it's not rhyming. It's doing some things that are quite different, even as it's occupying his Knott's form of something akin to a sonnet, but not that. But it's a beautiful poem if you haven't read it. So I guess Berryman and Bidart. Yeah.
I was just wondering why you write about geese so much.
I grew up in this town called Mount Holly, New Jersey. And there's actually several things. My mother scared the crap out of me when I was younger because she was bit by a goose when she was a kid, so I was always scared of geese. So they occupy this space of don't fuck with a geese, don't fuck with goose. But it's also because they figure prominently in my youth, probably another reoccurring image, sort of dreamlike that happens for me. So the geese are there. And then when I lived in Texas, there are no geese. And so I miss them. Like, I kind of miss winter. Now I don't. But then I did. When I was in Texas, I lived on the stream, and you would get migratory patterns of birds coming through, and they were just great bird watch. So I got into birds. And they probably also sonically do something for me. That long E sound, the S, it's probably something in the sound that propels me into thinking about poems, into thinking. That's why geese.
Do you have reoccurring things that you find that pop up in your unconscious mind that might pop up?
Yeah, I think it's a little more conscious now because you go back and you read stuff, you're like, oh, you're doing a lot with the word dead. I think the thing that I'm quite interested in is the dead. Poets are always interested in the dead. Mary Ruffel has a great essay in Madness, Rack, and Honey where she says the only conversation a living poet can really have with another poet is with a dead poet because they've said everything they could say. So the dead are really the only people we can talk to. Because in some ways, the living, the conversation goes on and on and on. It's not until we have a terminal body of something, that you can talk to something. So I think the dead for me are fascinating. Also, I was reading that Komiyaka poem, as well as Auden's Musée de Beaux-Arts, the idea of suffering. And then I was reading a lot of Foucault, and for him, writing is an act of death. To write is actually not an enlivening thing. So for me, the thing that I'm always kind of going back to is the dead, partly because I think another recurring dream that I always had was dying. I die a lot in my dreams. I think because I had a fear of death because I grew up really, really fundamentalist Christian, and I was always scared of going to hell. For a long time, I had this fear, like I couldn't move. I felt very arrested in my early 20s because I was like, oh, I'm gonna die and go to hell. So I'm constantly interested in interrogating that space, and actually the space of the newly dead. The newest work I'm working on is about the newly dead, because I think it must be really confusing to be newly dead. If you think about that moment, it's kind of like just being born. You're like, ah, what is this? Those are my reoccurring images or thought.
Could you talk a little bit about, I noticed in a lot of your poems, the relationship between nature and art. You would describe specific moments in nature, specific images, and how that relates to maybe your thought process or kind of your emotions towards certain things.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I found this thing in grad school called art criticism, and it's amazing. I'm a literary critic. I have a PhD. I think art critics write the best criticism in terms of just pure writing. And I was reading all these art critics on Van Gogh. Van Gogh actually writes a lot about nature. When Van Gogh was first going out after the minister type stuff, and he was going out and he was trying to write, he was trying to draw. His biggest issue, when he wrote to Theo, his brother, that nature moved. He was like, I can't actually render nature because it's moving. And that's why I begin that one poem, Nature Always Begins with Resistance. For him, the best way to do nature was dead. So Van Gogh, in his letters, particularly when he's talking about art and color, really shape how I think about studying the world. And so for me, there's a way in which I think of myself like I'm kind of a failed painter. And so I think poetry is kind of like where I get to be painterly. For me, there's that connection where recently I've been trying to grapple with the idea of anthropomorphizing nature, which I'm always interested in. That for me is conflictual, giving nature human subjectivity and the ethics of that for a lot of different reasons. So I'm always grappling with, what do we do with nature? What is nature there for? And even that question, for, that's a problematic idea that nature's there for anything. So I think that when we're making art, particularly when we're occupying, like I'm always occupying other people's bodies and voices, I think there's an ethic to that. You have to be very careful. I think you should. I think you should radically occupy people and things that are nothing like you, but you have to be very careful about that. I've never been a woman. Maybe I have, but not recently. But I'm very interested in exploring women's subjectivity, the subjectivity of people that are nothing like me, because I think that that's what art should do. So it's a long way of answering that question.
Yeah, asylum poem where you're thinking about the sister and she was in the asylum and she was losing her mind. Were you trying to put yourself in that situation and maybe try to view it from that? Is that what you're...
Well, I think yes, and also this is where biography sort of intersects, but also is not part of it. Like later I found out after leaving home from college that my sister was put in a hospital. She was never when I was there, but I didn't find out too much later. And so it's sort of like there's pieces of things that you're working with. One of the things that I think poems allow us to do is imagine and say the unsayable. There I'm trying to occupy what I'll never know, which I think is a great place to start. I think not knowing, not having language for something, but knowing there is some, that's the place to start for me. It's not so much I'm trying to embody that. When I play with it with Duchenne, whose son also was schizophrenic, I'm melding Duchenne's life with my own and thinking about Duchenne becomes the father of basically neurology because he's trying to figure out how to cure his son who has schizophrenia. So he maps all the nerve system because he first thinks it's a nervous issue. So I'm thinking about, what do we do to try to make our own family well? How do we go out and get them back from where they are because we feel this gap, distance? So the poems often are interested in that gap and distance and understanding that to some degree, you can't ever really bring those two distances closer. Sometimes all you can do is imagining